Welcome to Necessary Conversations with Daryl M. Taliaferro. Conversations that are real, raw, and relevant. Let's get the conversation started now.
Hey, welcome to episode number 4. On today's episode, we're going to converse about the assault on the black man. That's right. We're going to discuss how the African-American man is under attack. And to help me do that, I'm happy to have on today's episode my friend and my brother, Eric D. Evans. Now, Eric is the executive director of 413 Strong, a nonprofit organization that helps men between the ages of 18 to 30 succeed both personally and professionally. Eric, what's up, my brother?
What's up, man? How are you doing?
I'm good. So, man, I appreciate you being on the podcast today.
I appreciate you having me.
So we're talking about today the assault on the black man. And over the last few months, a few years even, we've seen how so much has happened within the news and particularly the African-American community, violence against the black man. Tell me a little bit about your perspective on that.
Man, I definitely believe that there is an assault on the black man. And it goes back years from Nixon, although I wasn't really necessarily old enough to understand it, but I do believe that it started way back then, and our president Ronald Reagan picked it up. You know, when you have the whole three strikes, your outlaw, Bill Clinton, that was a way that they came up with to take the black man out of the home, to make him irrelevant. And which now I believe that you're starting to see that that's not enough. They're hungry for more. You're seeing men getting killed by the hands of police officers, as well as people trying to walk to the beach and they're trying to hang these black men.
Yeah.
Who does that? Why? You know, and I think it's just because, you know, what we have in the office right now is our president. He's not putting a stop to it. He is co-signing it in many ways.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that is not new is that, to your point earlier, there's definitely been an assault on the black man that went way back to Nixon, to Reagan. But even before then, when you think about the Willie Lynch story, Lynch story is a story that really talks about how individuals would take a black man and they tie a horse to his right arm and a horse to his left arm and try to pull him apart. And it really got at the idea of really separating them from the woman and really making the woman have to fend for herself, you know, and really taking the man out of the equation. Why is it that people fear the black man so much?
I think it goes way back, you know, before either you or I was even on this earth. Is, you know, we come from strong genes and smart intelligence. And I do believe that they know that we are strong creatures and we're strong men and we're able to handle our business in such a way. And I do believe that they understand that if we get ourselves together, we are the most dangerous group of people. More than anybody, you know, we was the leaders of not just one little small country. We was leaders of many countries, many nations. And I believe that they are definitely a fear of that. And, you know, they know if we get ourselves together, you know, it's going to be a problem.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, one of the things that I believe is that, you know, the African-American male is not just dangerous because of the intellect or the affect of the male. We're dangerous because of our passion and our drive for things.
Yeah.
When we put our minds to things, man, you cannot stop an African-American male, whether it be good or bad. You know, you got somebody that's in the street that's trying to really build up a gang or to develop a gang. If they're passionate about it, they're going to put their all into it. The same thing, whether you're a lawyer or doctor or preacher, teacher, whatever you do, you know, that's something that we do. And I really believe that our counterparts are concerned that, wait a minute, to your point earlier, if they get their stuff together, they're going to push us out of here.
And even, you know, you go back to inventions, you know, some of the greatest inventions that was ever made, you know, was from the black man. You know, you even think about the water gun. Who would ever think about that? You know, that was invented by a black man. Yeah. The use of the peanut is invented by the black man. The idea of the light bulb, the black man, and probably plenty other inventions that was stolen from us. And I believe that that gave them an insight of, man, these dudes are really, really smart. These dudes are really, really intelligent. These group of men can really have a major impact on the world. Who else could motivate and move a million men like Minister Farrakhan did in the 1990s? Who could have done that?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, the black man. You think about who could have moved a nation of people like MLK did. And you think about what Mr. Lewis did. I know he just passed here recently, but he, in many ways, did a lot more impact than MLK did.
Yeah.
And I know that may be taboo for some people, but, you know, you think about some of the laws that he helped pass and some of the things that he was able to do because he had a longer period of time. And I think that people know that. And I think that those people knew that people such as him and men such as him are very, very dangerous. And if you can shut those people up and you can put those people in cages, or better yet, put those people in the ground, that's the best place.
Man, I absolutely agree. And to your point earlier, in terms of John Lewis, you're right. When you look at his life and put it in perspective, because he had a longer time on this earth, obviously he had more time to do various things. But one of the things that really kind of caught me off guard when you think about John Lewis is the fact that he's a civil rights icon. He's a legislator. He's one that really fought for civil rights all of his life. But even in death, you have a president that's trying to tarnish his reputation. You have mm-hmm. a president that's trying to say, you know, well, you know, I didn't go to his funeral because he didn't come to my inauguration. Different things of that nature. We have a living president who is so egregious and so negative toward our heroes in our community.
And yeah, he's definitely a guy that he's a guy that is kind of funny. You know, I look at dude as a guy that is jealous.
Yeah.
When someone shows a man that much love, and then on top of that, you put he's a black man that much love. No, that's just way too much love. That man had impacted the young lady down in Georgia. I heard an interview that she said that she took the picture of the school. There wasn't a lot of people wearing their masks while they was in school. And she said the interviewer asked her, would you do it again? She said it was good trouble.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that type of stuff right there showed you the impact.
Yeah.
You know, who's going to say that they was impacted by Donald Trump?
Nobody in a positive way.
Not in a positive light. I'm sure there may be somebody, but you know, who of us are gonna be able to say that I was impacted by him in a positive light and I want to take up his manner and move forward? Nobody.
Yeah.
You know, unlike Mr. Lewis, Mr. Lewis has a great impact. Yeah. You know, and the movement of schools being named after him. You know, there's been monuments for him. Man, come on, man. That's what they're afraid of. If you get enough of that, he's an ordinary guy. He was an ordinary guy that went to school, you know, that come from humble beginnings. He didn't have a father who gave him $1 million to start a dream.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. And it's interesting you should say that, because ultimately when we talk about the attack on the black man, we talk about how it goes back, as we talked about earlier, Willie Lynch, it goes back to Reagan and Nixon days. It also even goes even further back when you talk about, you look at the black man, and this is necessary conversations. It's real, it's raw, and it's relevant. So when you talk about the black man, there is the perception that the black man is more and is larger than life in a variety of ways. So a lot of men, a lot of white men or Hispanic men or men of different hues or women of different hues are intimidated by the black man, not just because of the intellect, but also the prowess or how they look, you know, how they come across, you know, whether it be our sturdy appearance in terms of, you know, when a black man walks in the room, a black man has the ability to turn heads. A black man walks in the room, a black man commands attention, right, wrong, or indifferent.
Right,
and,
absolutely.
And I believe that a lot of our counterparts are jealous of that, and they try to diminish that. They try to limit the amount of exposure, if you will, that comes to the black man.
Absolutely. You know, I'm 6'6", and I'm almost 300 pounds. Whenever I walk into a room, you're right, I'm going to get some heads that's going to turn.
Yeah.
And I ain't said one word.
Right.
It's just the stature. It's the what you're being taught to walk tall and walk with confidence, not arrogance, but confidence. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I believe many men, especially white dudes, they are very intimidated by that. I have been in board meetings, and because I stood up, and because when I look at someone, I give them a certain look.
Right.
He's intimidating.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I didn't know what to say.
Yeah.
How? I ain't said nothing.
Yeah.
And if anybody know me, know I like to have fun. I like to smile.
Yeah.
I'm with all of that. But there's another side that, you know, just know when you come, I'm coming for you as well.
For sure.
And when I walk in, I walk in with, I'm about the business.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that a lot of people, they just don't know how to take that. I can't even imagine what it was like all those many years ago that the slaves was being taken. Let me say it like this. I believe that our confidence and the way that we come into a room goes back to that time, that we had to hold our head up high because, you know, we see what they're doing to our people.
Yeah.
And I believe that we had to stay strong. I believe that's where we get that from. Stay strong.
Yeah.
Stay strong. Stay yeah. in there. And that's where it comes from. And we carry that. We carry that like a banner.
Yeah, that's so true. And not only that, I believe also that, you know, those individuals who are intimidated, they're really not intimidated by you, the person. They're intimidated by your blackness. They're also intimidated by your stature. They're also intimidated by the perception of the power that you carry. Because to mm-hmm. your point, you can just walk in a room. And those of you who are listening to the podcast, I know, Eric, we've known each other for years. You know, when you first meet Eric, you may look at him and be like, man, this guy's tall or whatever. You know, but when you have a conversation, any intimidation or anything you throw out the window. But I believe, though, that individuals who don't know you are intimidated based upon the perception of what they believe or how they perceive you to come across.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I believe that's the same thing in the streets. So like
yeah, absolutely.
When you have police officers who are killing unarmed black men. And let me say this to be fair on both sides. I've never been a police officer, but I've been a black man all my life. I've never been a police officer that, you know, was concerned about his life in the failed clutch of circumstance. I've never been one. So with that said, though, I could only imagine the nervousness and the fear and the trepidation that comes across you when you are encountered with a situation where you have to make a split second decision. But here's the challenge. As a police officer, you are allegedly trained. You go through exercises and different things to de-escalate a situation. But instead of de-escalating the situation, many times as police officers, especially police officers of a different hue, they escalate the situation.
Well, to me, to be quite honest, Daryl, I believe that the police officers, it's unfair. It's unfair that they are the only ones that we hold to a degree, and we expect them to be able to make a decision within a split second, and they don't have practice.
Yeah.
If they were an attorney, they are always practicing law. If they were doctors, they will always be practicing medicine. But if they are a police officer, they should just be able to just turn it on, turn it off. And yeah. I don't believe that that's right.
Right.
However, if a person is walking away from me, he deems me to be no threat.
Right.
And that's the problem that most of us have is that how can someone be threatening of me to me if he or she is walking away? And then it's almost one of those other things, though, Daryl, is it's overkill.
Yeah, it is.
Not only do you shoot me once, but you shot me eight times.
Yeah.
You know, One of the things that is very fearful for me, I think it was a guy up in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It was a big guy. You know, he got out the car and he was walking back to his truck. And the lady female officer, she shot him. She shot him several times, really technically in the back. Mm-hmm. You know, how is he a threat to you? And why are you so scared?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why are you so scared? He's leaving you.
Yeah.
And if you needed some assistance, why not just wait?
I agree.
And I think it's a matter of, yes, you got the training on the front end, but you and I both know that there should be other training that comes with that.
Absolutely.
You know, sensitivity training, diversity training, behavior training, all of those type of things is part of it.
Yeah.
You know, community awareness. A lot of times these cops, they come from different backgrounds, different cultures, and they're thrust inside of this community that they are patrolling. And they don't understand. They don't understand the culture over there. They don't understand why I stand a certain way or why I walk a certain way. They don't understand that I'm trying to leave you.
Yeah.
I'm trying to de-escalate this whole situation. I don't want no smoke from you.
Yeah.
Because I know if I give you a reason to give me some smoke, you're going to kill me.
Oh, without question.
And they don't understand that.
You know, it's interesting because ultimately what you're talking about is a situation with Jacob Blake in Wisconsin where he is walking around his silver SUV, and this happened on Sunday. And he is in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and police are following him right behind him. Now, you have several police officers who are around, and I saw the video. He didn't have anything in his hand. He's simply walking around the front of his vehicle attempting to get in his car. Easily what could have taken place. And again, in the interest of fairness, I'm not a police officer. But I do have a perspective, and I am analytical. I am a strategist, so I look at various angles of things. Easily, one of the police officers could have come around and blocked his way. He had mm-hmm. nothing in his hand. If I'm not mistaken, it was at least, I know it was two. I believe it was three or four. Even at two police officers, they could have easily grabbed him, subdued him, and waited for backup if that was the case. There's no reason. No rhyme or reason to your point earlier that they should have shot him and shot him 8 times. Listen, Eric, he was sitting in his car. Now, of course, we don't know what was in his car. We don't know if he could have been reaching. We don't know that. But what we do know is, for all intent and purposes, he had nothing in his hand.
Well, you know, he's one of definitely many. You know, you look at Mr. Castile.
Yep.
You know, he was asked to do something and he began to do that and he was still killed.
That's right.
So then you look at Mr. King up in New York years before this, over 10 years ago.
Yeah.
The day before his wedding, he was killed. He was shot over 10 times.
Wow.
So, you know, this is one of many and this has to stop. I believe that this new administration, if we get Trump out of office, and I hope there ain't no shuck that is going to occur that will keep Trump in office. But mm-hmm. if Biden gets elected, my prayer is that they are sincere and they take a real true look at this, a real true look at what is going on with this culture. I believe that there is we only make up like 12% of this nation.
Right.
So if we make up 12%, I think that they want to eliminate probably more than half of us. Now, I know I'm saying probably, but that's a good number for them.
Yeah.
It's less of us strong black men that they have to worry about. They ain't got to worry about if Blue and Easy is coming up.
Right.
And if there's a father there to protect them and give them direction, they ain't got to worry about it because I won't be there if they can eliminate me.
Yeah.
And I believe that. You know, look at it. Every other day or every other week, there is another black man that is being killed by police officers while there are other white men that have been arrested, similar situation, and they have been detained peacefully.
Yeah.
And not killed.
Yeah, yeah.
Not killed. He or she is able to go home to his wife or to his girl, whatever.
Yeah.
So make it make sense. And it doesn't. It just doesn't make sense.
But see, and I'm glad you said that, because ultimately you see these situations, for example, with Philandel Castile, or you see the situation with Jacob Blake on just this past week. And again, these individuals did not have anything in their hand. But I saw something not too long ago of a white gentleman who had a machete in his hand.
Yeah, I saw that.
And he wasn't killed. He wasn't shot. I mean, the police officers, they were running from him.
Yep.
I mean, if there was a reason, first of all, there's no reason to inflict bodily harm on someone when they're not threatening your life. However, this gentleman was threatening their lives.
Yep.
And it's hard to say, you know, because people may listen to this podcast and, you know, some may think cynical about the topic and say, well, there's not an assault on black people. There is an assault. Because if there wasn't an assault, why would black people have to fear for their lives at a routine traffic stop? A routine traffic stop, because my taillight was on, my taillight was out. I get the stank or the snot beat out of me. But this gentleman who shoots up a church in Charleston, South Carolina, is taken to Burger King to get a hamburger?
Yeah.
What sense does that make?
Yeah. It doesn't make sense, man. And the list goes on and on and on. I mean, and they take him in peacefully.
Yeah.
He was taken in custody peacefully.
Without incident.
Without incident. You know, while, you know, little Johnny here, he was killed. And yeah. he was walking away with a pair of scissors in his hand. A police officer killed him because he had a water gun that looked like a real gun. And soon as the police officer pulls up, he shoots and kills him.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Make it make sense.
Yeah.
It don't make sense. It doesn't add up. More importantly, you know what I'm saying? These police officers, this president, this administration is giving the okay, is giving the green light to people. Police, y'all go ahead and knock them off. It's cool. Your guy down there in Florida who killed Trayvon Martin, that's cool.
Yeah,
go
George
ahead
Zimmerman.
And kill him off. George yeah. Zimmerman. Then the other incident with the young man that was in Georgia that was running from the house.
Yeah, Ahmaud Arbery.
And he was detained, tried to be detained by two white guys. They shot and killed him. And he was running. And as if, hey, no big deal. You know, hey. Yeah. No harm, no foul here. You know, we're trying to protect our community. Come on, man. It's a straight up and down assault on black guys. And I think they're trying to kill us by any means necessary. If the police officers don't kill us, Daryl, I'm telling you, if the police officers don't kill us, it'll be the white man that will be trying to kill us. Me and the wife was in Florida a couple of months ago, actually. And I had never, ever really been uncomfortable until one day. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting down there and I'm like, man, I am in the heart of Trump country.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I don't even have my gun on me.
Yeah.
What do I do if somebody turns and decides that they want to bring some smoke my way?
Yeah.
What do I do?
Yeah.
And there was a lot of tension down there.
Absolutely.
And I was like, man, I hope and pray don't nothing go wrong.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm very cautious about this right now.
I'm glad you brought that up, because here it is, you're with your family in Florida, you're trying to relax, do whatever you need to do, and now you have to concern yourself, first of all, as a man protecting their family, but then as a black man trying to protect your family. And the sad reality is, if they come at you, one, you're outnumbered. And then two, they're easily going to spin the narrative to make it seem like you were the aggressor.
Aggressor, yep. Yep. And I thought about that too. Like, I'm always going to be looked upon as the aggressor. Always.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, you know, I'm not a small guy, but I am in their eyes very, very dangerous because of my size and because of my stance and because of my tone. I talk matter of a fact. And, I have to be very, very cautious about what I do sometimes and be aware and not to try to put my family in jeopardy. And not that I'm going to run from anything, but I'm definitely not going to try to pick a fight when I know I'm outnumbered.
Yeah, yeah. And then here's the reality. You can be dead right and still be dead.
Yep. Dead right and dead.
Yeah. you can. Yeah.
That's so true.
Yeah. You can be absolutely right about the situation. You know, somebody's trying to, you know, come up against your wife, you know, say something slick or do something slick, because, you know, the reality is, unfortunately, in this day and time, with especially in Florida, with the stand your ground rules and stand your ground laws, it's a situation where easily, to your point, because of your stature and your stance, all you have to do, Eric, is stand up.
Yep.
Literally. And
yep. They fear for their life.
Yeah. It, you know, so as a father, you have boys.
Yep.
You have successfully come through a lot of things in your own life.
Yep.
You have successfully raised one, little Eric. You got two growing now, Israel and Ezra.
Yeah.
What is your perspective on the assault of the black man as a father? What do you say to your boys, especially little Blue? Because Blue is coming up in this generation where there's an apparent assault. You see, when little E was coming up, there was an assault, but it wasn't as poignant as it is today.
Yeah. Well, man, to tell you the truth, I am so scared. Maybe scared isn't the right word. I'm really nervous.
Yeah.
And I pray to God every day that He keeps me on this earth.
Yeah.
For years and years and years to come. My job is to try to mold Israel and Ezra the way that I did with Eric.
Yeah.
And but I am extremely nervous.
Yeah.
I tell Israel, we call him Blue.
Right.
I tell him to walk tall. I tell him to hold his head up high. I tell him every single day he's a young prince, and one of these days he will be a king.
Yeah.
One day. Don't get that twisted. You're not a king yet, boy. Yeah.
No, you're wrong. Don't no, you're wrong.
but you know, I tell him that, and I tell him that, you know, hey, son, this is what you have to do.
Yeah.
Now he's four.
Right.
And what kind of conversation can you really have with a four-year-old?
Right.
Israel is just now recognizing the difference between black and white.
Yeah.
And that kind of hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
I want him to understand that he's a black man.
Yeah.
But I wanted to be the one who tell him that he's a black man.
Mm.
I didn't want nobody else to do that.
Yeah.
You know, but he picked it up. He picked it up. And he picked it up real quick off of the knee on the black man's neck.
George Floyd.
He picked it up from that because he heard the news people saying that there was a police officer kneeling on a black man's neck. And he said, well, what's a black man?
Wow.
And so you had to have this conversation now with this four-year-old.
Yeah.
Well, Israel, you're a black man. You're a black male. You're a black boy. And soon you will be a black man.
Yeah.
And so it was a very, very interesting conversation. And just this past Friday, the Pharrell and Jay-Z song, tribute to black man.
Mm-hmm.
That's his theme music now.
Yeah.
Black man.
Yeah.
And he got his fist up in the air, you know what I'm saying? He's a black man. And he recognized that. You know, it's cool, but it's scary because you know what's at stake here.
Yeah.
You know that if you don't get him rooted into what's real and what society will do to him and get him some good foundation, his life could be in jeopardy.
Well, that's all the time we have for episode 4. Join me next week for episode 5 as we continue the conversation with Eric Evans on the assault of the black man. You don't want to miss it.
Thanks for listening to Necessary Conversations with Daryl M. Taliaferro. Follow us on social media at Necessary Conversations Podcast. Join the conversation by leaving a message on our website, NecessaryConversationsPodcast.com. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you'll be notified every time a new one drops. Now, go have the conversations you need to have with the people you need to have them with.